Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we're covering today, Wednesday, June 11, 2014. President Kiir and Riek Machar agreed to form a transitional government within 2 months' time.
They agreed to complete the dialogue process within the coming 60 days on what, how, when and who to the culmination into the formation of transitional government of national unity.
And a prominent analyst in South Sudan says he does not think the latest agreement will make much of a difference.
There have been threats from the UN, there have been threats from the local regional organizations like IGAD, there have been threats from the US and a few other nations, but have those really resulted in any sort of impact?
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. President Salva Kiir and his former vice president, rebel leader Riek Machar, will work to set up a transitional government of national unity within 2 months. The two met for the second time in the Ethiopian capital since the conflict began 6 months ago. The leaders signed an agreement in early May recommitting to a ceasefire, which has since been repeatedly violated by both sides. At the side of the talks in Addis Ababa yesterday, Ethiopian Prime Minister Haile Mariam Desalegn said the two warring parties agreed to reach a settlement and adhere to a deadline.
They agreed to complete the dialogue process within the coming 60 days on what, how, when and who to the culmination into the formation of transitional government of national unity. And they also agreed to sign on the matrix of the timeline of the activities within the 60 days time frame set for themselves.
Regional leaders such as Ugandan President Yoweri Museveni and Kenyan Vice President William Ruto attended yesterday's talks. The East African bloc IGAD has been mediating the talks from the start. Official discussion will resume tomorrow in Addis Ababa on details of the peace plan. African Union's Peace and Security Commissioner Ismail Chirugi urged the two sides to be serious about discussions and to stand behind the agreements.
It is the hope and expectation of the African Union that it is high time that the warring parties will heed the call of their people and the international community to take their forthcoming political negotiations seriously and not use it as a forum to advance partisan position and delay a final outcome to the talks.
The political conflict has turned into a humanitarian crisis with more than 1.3 million people displaced since the conflict began in December. It's not yet clear who will take part in the transitional government. The spokesman for the SPLM in opposition says he welcomes the IGAD initiatives to end the political crisis in the country. Hussein Marnyot says Riek Machar has instructed the opposition delegation to negotiate in good faith, while he accused the government delegation of dragging its feet at the talks.
We are actually committed and ready to end the war and actually to achieve peace. It's only that when you talk of achieving peace, two things. One is that we want the commitment of the government. The other day when we signed on the 9th, the two principals signed an agreement on cessation of hostilities. President Kiir went back to Juba and went and denounced the same agreement. He said it was pushed to. On our part, we are committed to negotiate peace and we are ever ready. Not only 60 days, even 1 week, we could actually finish if the government is really committed, you know, to achieving peace in South Sudan.
Both of you have been threading accusations on who is violating the ceasefire. The government is blaming you, you are blaming the government, and it's a blame game. What other reasons would you give to them to convince them that this time around the rebels are serious and they want peace and they will stick to this framework of 60 days?
Well, John, two things on this. Number one is, as I said, we are really committed to achieving peace in South Sudan. With us here in the talks in Addis Ababa, we're supposed to finish the political framework and the cessation of hostilities metrics of security. It's only that the government rejected all what was put forward. Number one, in the political framework, we're just saying, let us have reforms in all the sectors of the government. And number two, the issue of federal government And number three, the parameters for the permanent constitution. And this is what hold back the signing on a political framework that we could not agree on, because the government doesn't want system of federal system in the country. They don't want reforms. They don't want parameters of the permanent constitution. They are just talking of the current constitution of the country. That should be the constitution.
You're saying you are committed this time around to find an everlasting solution to the problems that made you to fight each other. Does this commitment translate into stopping fighting? Because what is important and people are concerned about is fighting. There's a lot of fighting going on, as you people are also talking in Addis. Is your group going to stop fighting?
Honestly, John, we have, since the day the cessation hostilities were signed and the agreement on the 9th by the two principals, our forces never advanced to anywhere. It's the forces of Salva Kiir who are advancing now to Wadekona at the west of Upper Nile, now also around the area, and all the places now that are advancing, they want to take over. And one of them was saying privately that we are the legitimate government, we have the responsibility to take over all the places because we are the one to give protection to the citizens. So I think because of this background, they are attacking all our places, that they want to take them over to claim that they are the legitimate government.
What kind of reforms are you advocating for?
Well, John, you know, the reforms, you know, what caused the conflict? You can see it. The security forces that are killing people day and night is like the security forces of one person who have employed them, like your workers in your house. These are not the state security forces. What reforms the judiciary? Not actually, you know, bringing your friends or your relatives to, you know, to the judiciary and then frame cases against other people, not actually following the law on the profession. You know, it's very unfortunate. Senior people of the government are talking that even when we sign peace, we don't want these people, the forces that are fighting, to be reintegrated into the army. Who is to integrate who? This is our country. It is Addis Ababa and the talks here, and with the spirit of the heads of IGAD, this is where we can actually achieve peace in the country.
All right.
Not through force and all this.
That's Hussein Marniot, spokesman for the SPLM in opposition. He was speaking to me from Addis Ababa earlier today. The presidential spokesman, Wek Ateng, says the government is fully committed to implementing the just-signed agreement between President Kiir and rebel leader Riek Machar. Aside from mandating a transitional government, the deal also requires that neither side interrupt humanitarian support for displaced people. Ateng says the government will do its level best to ensure the agreement is implemented, but tells Lucy Pony it takes two to adhere to the agreement.
It is the rebel who are actually attacking, you know, the government position from different areas. If you look at the map of South Sudan, you will find that majority of places now in South Sudan are under the government control. It is the rebel who are trying to expand. So the government is doing it best, and I don't see any reason why it should be, you know, that the government should be punished for failing to honor. When in fact it is the one honoring the May 9th agreement.
The opposition are saying that the government does not want to discuss reforms, federalism and security sector reforms. Is this true? And if it's true, why?
The government does not have to discuss the issue of federalism in Ethiopia. It wasn't the case. You know, the rebellion did not happen simply because there was no federalism in the country. South Sudan enjoyed some form of decentralized system of governance since 2005, and this is what is enshrined in our constitution. If anybody goes by, you know, suggesting any other form of the government, you know, contrary to what is in the constitution, that will require the referendum, and the people of South Sudan are the ones to decide. It cannot be decided by a few people in Addis Ababa. The security sector reform, I think we don't have any problem to go by that if the rebel are willing to get into this, because Riek Machar went and mobilized the tribal army, and later on you would be seeing that he wanted these hundreds of thousands of civilian armed civilians, you know, you will be trying to bring them to the army, to the national army, because you wanted at the end of the day to have a lion's share in the national army so that he can terrorize the country, you know, and try to, you know, to force the country to succumb to his will of becoming a president. So it is not the government that has a problem in in a security sector reform. It is the rebels themselves.
Now, the issue of inclusivity has been a point of contention, and I'm just wondering, this time round, is the government willing to let all the stakeholders participate in the talks?
The government is actually saying, when it comes to the talks and any peaceful settlement, it should be confined to the two warring parties, because it is not any stakeholder in South Sudan that is fighting. But at the later stage, speaking on the process of forming the transitional government, going for a national dialogue constitutional conference, these are the things that you would want anybody to participate on it. And the national dialogue constitutional conference is what the government actually would allow anybody to participate. But at this level, it should be the government and the rebels who are taking arms that should be the one sitting to discuss.
What is the government going to do now, this time round, different to try and build trust among them and the opposition, since now they are going to work as almost a group?
This is not a government duty, it is a collective duty, including the rebels, because if the rebels has caused havoc and they push the country into political abuses. So it is collectively a responsibility for the two warring parties to ensure that they close the gap and ensure that the people of South Sudan are reconciled in order to be able to sit in one room. So this is not only government duty.
Is the government serious about signing a peace deal within the 60 days?
Well, the government is serious. And that's why the principal has signed and committed himself to the 9th of May agreement. Within 60 days, there are a number of things that are supposed to happen. That is including, signing permanent ceasefire and going for a kind of comprehensive peace agreement, and then you go to the other state. So within 2 months, I see the government is ready to sign, peace agreement. And the president could not have even signed, he could not have even committed himself if government was not going to be ready to sign the peace agreement.
That's presidential spokesman Ateny Wek Ateny speaking to Lucy Pony via phone line from Juba. We apologize for the poor quality of the line. An analyst with South Sudan think tank says the agreement signed between President Kiir and Riek Machar will not bring about widespread change that is needed in the country. Director of the SAD Institute says there's nothing concrete in IGAD's communique which commits the two leaders to implement the framework agreement signed in May.
Agostino Ting Mayai says IGAD has no leverage to use in holding President Kiir and rebel leader Riek Machar accountable for refusing to adhere to the terms of the agreement.
That has always been the case. There have been threats from the UN, there have been threats from the local regional organizations like IGAD, there have been threats from the US and a few other nations, but have those really resulted in any sort of impact? I don't think so. So this is just business as usual, unless I see some efforts being put towards this, especially concrete plans on how to bring peace to South Sudanese.
Mayai says for peace to prevail, IGAD must involve all stakeholders to the conflict, including representatives of civil society groups and other political parties, to articulate the problems affecting ordinary South Sudanese. Last week, IGAD organized a symposium for South Sudanese to discuss a framework for peace ahead of official talks scheduled to begin tomorrow in Addis. Mayai says he doubts the two leaders are truly committed finding a solution on the political standoff.
I think that they have been talking about peace and wanting to make sure that peace is realized, but the activities that they carry out go in the contrary. And until I see some genuine change and genuine efforts being concerted by the two leaders, I think I have the right to think that they're not serious.
The analyst says the stability of the young nation is vital to the economic stability of the rest of the world.
We are a small village as the world, and the international community is basically affected by whatever is taking place here. You have the U.S. that has invested so much in South Sudan. You have Norway. You have locally in the region, Uganda. You have Kenya. So everybody has a stake in the stability of South Sudan. So I think there is a genuine interest there for South Sudan to be able to realize its own destiny.
Mayai says the presence of Uganda's President Yoweri Museveni at the IGAD summit sent a signal of reconciliation between the Ugandan president and rebel leader Riek Machar. But he says it's not enough to just talk about ending the conflict. He says actions speak louder than words.
Putting it as a political issue alone is not going to resolve the issues. And I think we need to be more comprehensive in devising some ways to bring not just peace for the time being, but for stability and prosperity of the country.
For VOA News, I am Gumedev Sorakarinj in Juba.
You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. A prominent South Sudanese bishop urges President Kiir and Riek Machar to give peace a chance. Don't go away, that story is coming up.
You don't want to miss VOA's South Sudan in Focus. You can hear us on one of our FM affiliate stations around the country or on the web at voanews.com/South Sudan. In Juba, listen to South Sudan in Focus at 8 p.m. on 93.5. You can also find us on shortwave at 11995, 13870, and 15180 kilohertz. Or download our podcast on iTunes. That's South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. Put your flags up
in the sky. Hi, this is Sonny Young of the Sunny Side of Sports. Visit VOAfootball.com for live updates on the World Cup in Brazil. The site is optimized for your mobile phone or tablet and will bring you the latest scores, stats, photos, and videos. And everything can be shared with your friends from your mobile device to Facebook and Twitter. World Cup nonstop at VOAfootball.com.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
who should buy your cell phone airtime? You or the person who wants to reach you?
If you're a student like I am, it is either my boyfriend or my father who should buy for me a phone.
Me, because it's my phone, so I have to load in my airtime and call whoever I want because it's me in need. So if anyone also wants to call me, they'll also load their airtime and call me. That's how communication works out.
He should buy for me airtime or what. So long as I have the battery, then we communicate.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. The United Nations General Assembly was expected to elect by acclamation the Foreign Minister of Uganda as the president of its 69th session. Sam Kutesa has a controversial record of being embroiled in domestic corruption allegation as the international spokesman for Uganda's recent anti-homosexuality law. From the United Nations headquarters, VOA's Margaret Bashar reports, some have questioned whether he should lead this 193 assembly.
Sam Kutesa has been foreign minister for Uganda's longtime president, Yoweri Museveni, on and off since 2005. Most recently, he garnered international attention for defending the Ugandan government's harsh anti-homosexuality law that the president signed in February. In the past, Kutesa has survived political censure by the Ugandan parliament following a corruption scandal. No formal charges were brought against him. Questions, however, have been raised about a company he once chaired and is still believed to own shares in, Entebbe Handling Services, or ENHAS, which has contracts with at least one UN peacekeeping mission in Africa, and whether this presents a conflict of interest. A UN spokesperson said the organization is trying to ascertain its current relationship with ENHAS. According to the UN's procurement website, the company has been a registered vendor with it since June 2006. Kutesa's candidacy has inspired a petition on change.org, a website that hosts public petitions, which has garnered more than 11,000 signatures. Milton Alimadi, the editor and publisher of the Black Star News website, started the petition, which calls on U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry to revoke Kutesa's visa so he cannot come to New York.
It's one of the quickest ways to stop Mr. Kutesa from becoming the president of the United Nations General Assembly. I think certainly that the recent precedent, of course, was when the U.S. Decided to not provide a visa for the Iranian designated new permanent representative to the United Nations.
In that case, the Iranian diplomat had been implicated in the 1979 hostile takeover of the U.S. Embassy in Tehran and the ensuing hostage crisis. But the United States rarely invokes its right as host country to withhold a diplomat's visa. Washington has made no move to block Kutesa's entry. State Department spokesperson Marie Harf said recently that the choice of the Ugandan to preside over the General Assembly is up to member states, specifically the African Regional Group, whose turn it is this year to put forth a candidate.
Members of the regional groups are the ones who select the leader, so in terms of being part of the selection process, we of course weren't. And look, no matter who's president of the General Assembly, we will continue standing up, defending LGBT rights at the UN.
UN spokesman Stéphane Dujarric echoed that, noting that the president of the General Assembly is not a UN staff position.
The president of the General Assembly is chosen by the member states. It is entirely a decision of the General Assembly. It is not the Secretary General's decision, or he has no input into that process.
Milton Alimadi says Sam Kutesa is not the best candidate Africa has to offer and urged him to withdraw his candidacy.
The right thing to do would be for Mr. Kutesa to just bow out, and the African continent would still have the opportunity to have another candidate.
Barring that unlikely outcome, Kutesa will be proclaimed president of the 69th session of the General Assembly on Wednesday and take up his duties in September. Margaret Bashir, VOA News, the United Nations.
Back to South Sudan. A South Sudanese church leader wants President Kiir and rebel leader Riek Machar to implement immediately the terms of the framework agreement signed in May. Bishop Moses Deng Bol of the Episcopal Church of Sudan in South Sudan says the priority for the warring parties is to stop fighting. For VOA News, Michael Atit has more from Wau.
Diocesan Bishop Moses Deng of Wau says the church in South Sudan has a strong influence across the country and can help the government in nation building. Moses Deng says religious leaders speak on behalf of the majority of the community who are tired of fighting, which has nearly destroyed towns in Upper Nile, Jonglei, and Unity States. He says he can no longer stand by and watch country slide into a full-blown war.
Church leaders in South Sudan, we are not interested in a fighting continuing. Whatever the reason given for that war, we have said, stop it now. And that is the main message from the leaders who are now in Addis Ababa. And it is from all of us, the church leaders in South Sudan, and even the other leaders of other religious groups like Muslim. We all stand in this.
Bishop Deng says, you cannot negotiate if the fighting continues. He says he has been encouraging the government and the opposition leaders to put aside their differences for the sake of the South Sudanese people and give peace a chance. Right Reverend Deng blamed the media for allegedly ignoring the voices of the church leaders during the political crisis.
The media doesn't speak to church leaders. Most of the time, the media speaks to politicians. And so the voices of church leaders are not being heard. But it doesn't mean they are not speaking. The only forum the church leaders have is the pulpit. And you can only speak to a number of people who have come to pulpit. But then it doesn't go out as when you speak to the media. But because maybe the media is not that independent, they are also afraid of reporting things that may be a bit critical to the government.
But Bishop Deng admits that those in the media may not report on people who are critical of the government for fear of retribution. In April, Anglican and Catholic Church leaders played a critical role in securing a peace deal between the South Sudan government and rebel loyal to David Yao Yao. Bishop Deng urges President Kiir to implement major governmental reforms to avoid continued fighting. He says politics is blamed for what happened in Juba in mid-December.
I personally believe that the cause of this conflict is bad governance. And so there are a lot of reforms that need to be done. We need to work on the constitution, something that have check and balances, so that people are held accountable by institutions that are empowered. We must also work on issues like separating the army from the government, because currently there is no separation, and we are saying we are a democratic society.
Bishop Deng is hopeful that the ongoing peace talk, which resumes in Addis Ababa tomorrow, will finally bring lasting peace to the country. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Wau.
A consortium of Christian university students in South Sudan, a group known as FOCUS, says the crisis in South Sudan can be resolved through an inclusive approach. FOCUS representatives say any interim government for South Sudan should be composed of technocrats, not politicians. As Philip Aleu reports from Juba, the students say they will be watching their country's leaders to see if they implement real political and social changes.
Joseph Noel, the general secretary for the 3,000-strong based student advocacy group, says the proposal on how to govern South Sudan covers economic, social, and political issues. Noel says in order for peace to prevail, politicians have to make tough decisions that favor the majority of citizens.
First, we need a government, that an interim government that should help, should come up and bring all different parties of South Sudan to sit together, and an interim government that is more built on people who are technically professionals, who are neutral, who will work to put up the foundation of the different aspects of governance.
Noel says that interim government should last 2 to 3 years. He urged both sides to the conflict and other stakeholders at the peace talk to make wise decisions regarding the interim period. He says his organization is aware that both pro and anti-government could be part of an interim government with conditions.
If among them there are people who are technocrats qualified to do something, they can be part of the interim government, but with the condition that they cannot be elected or be part of the government that will be coming, that will be elected.
Noel says oil, which is the country's most important resource, must be used for service delivery. He says the culture of corruption and lack of transparency must be rooted out, and every South Sudanese should be involved in seeking change.
Our view represents a majority of Christians, intellectuals, and then those who sat down working on the paper are people who are professionals. So this is where we see that why we should be taken seriously by the people, whether they're in the government or in the negotiation even itself.
Noel says the proposal was included at the talks. He says the faith-based group in Addis are working on using their influence to bring about real change in the country. For BOA News, I am Philip Tonaleu in Juba.
That's our show for this Wednesday. We now leave you with a gospel song, Yesu Motomoto. Been listening to that gospel song, Yesu Motomoto. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening, and we hope to see you back here tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.